coming up next. Minding Your Business with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
Comic-Con is coming. What's that you say? Emerald City Comic-Con, the largest comic book and pop culture convention in the Pacific Northwest, is being held at the Convention Center next weekend. The 3 days of Comic-Con feature industry headliners, discussion panels, lots of celebrities, prize drawings, tabletop gaming, and costume contests. A quick scan of Comic-Con videos on YouTube reveals a bit of fanaticism surrounding the event, with people showing up in costume as everything from bunnies to barbarians and kittens to Klingons. Comics retailers will dominate the exhibit hall with modern and vintage comics, action figures, models, and other products to capture the hearts and minds of genre fans. Last year's Comic-Con attracted more than 32,000 people. This year's event promises to be even bigger. It's no surprise with headliners like this guy. That was Jason Momoa as Khal Drogo in an episode of Game of Thrones, for those who are followers of the show, where he tears his opponent's throat out with his bare hands. The history of big-time, or should I say big-top events, is a long one, starting with Phineas Taylor Barnum, or P.T. Barnum of Barnum & Bailey Circus fame back in the 19th century. There have always been masters of entertainment, and Seattle has its own Jim DeMonikos, founder and organizer of Emerald City Comic-Con. You might say that Jim started Comic-Con with his bare hands. Back in 2003, the event was held at Quest Field and had a mere 2,500 attendees. This year's event is expected to attract nearly 40,000 people to the convention center. Before founding Comic-Con, Jim had started a chain of comic book stores called Comic Stop. The first one opened in 1999. Here to share with us his own graphic novel, story of Comic-Con and the Comic Stop, Jim DeMonikos. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jason Momoa is a headliner at this year's Comic-Con.
For sure.
What does a live actor have to do with comics?
So a lot of it is actually just we're all in the same genre. The part of the celebrities that actually work with our show is that the same people who are fans of comics, who are fans of pop culture, who are fans of sci-fi, fantasy, we're all in the same genre. So bringing actors that are related to the show that we do is part of our strategy in building an audience that is very diverse. Because you might be a fan of Game of Thrones, the TV show, maybe you've never read the books that they were based off of, or even now the graphic novels that are based off of the books. So it doesn't matter what kind of fan you are. We want to provide an experience that is great for any fan of pop culture, whether it be from comics all the way to television, movies, or more.
Tell me, first of all, why do you think Jason in particular is such a draw? Can you describe him for me?
Well, so he's just one of a dozen guests that we have coming to the show. So we have like a couple of the actors from Harry Potter, James and Oliver Phelps. So they played the Weasley twins, very popular characters from there. We have two actors from The Walking Dead, The Walking Dead being one of the number one rated cable TV shows.
That's
on
a new
AMC.
Show, isn't it?
Yeah, so they just wrapped up season two last week. So that show, its season finale earned record ratings for AMC. Also based off of a graphic novel. So the comics that Robert Kirkman writes, who is also a guest of ours, is what turned into this giant runaway success for other media. So that's part of our strategy in having these guests is that they do run the gamut. And so we do have the original creator of the comic, but now we have, here's the actors that are on the current TV show.
What comic did that person write? What is he famous for?
So he's famous for The Walking Dead.
Oh, and then they based the show on
the comic. They based the show off of it, correct.
Oh, I was wondering why that came to life again.
Yeah, yeah. So
very interesting.
It was great.
So you feel that the actors bring your event to life?
It's true. You know, I mean, we have like a – I mean, it's interesting because our comic – guests, we have over 200 of them between writers and artists and creators, and there's a dozen of these media guests, but the media guests we tie into with all, like, when you look at any single one of them, you can make an easy connection to our audience. And so we're not bringing people that have nothing to do with our show. Like, I don't want to have a wrestler or, you know, someone else who doesn't fit in with our genre. Instead, it's like, oh, these are actors from famous shows. We have Edward James Olmos, who played the captain on Battlestar Galactica, the new remake, but is also very well known for his iconic role in Blade Runner. So you have you're able to not only get actors who are relevant to their genre, but multi-generational people who grew up with Blade Runner. And then now, like, Battlestar just ended a couple years back.
This is a very particular part of pop culture. How would you segment that out from other types of pop culture?
So I would say that this is more the fantasy science fiction genre pop culture. And so it's very specific. But, I mean, think about it like this. One of the most highly anticipated movies of the year is coming out in May, and it's The Avengers. Well, The Avengers is just based off of comic books. I mean, that's the thing. It all kind of, for us, circles back around that this pop culture resurgence in the movies and television is actually based on this medium that's been around for, you know, decades. And so people who've read comics are now seeing their favorite characters come to life on the big screen. So you might be a fan of Iron Man, for example, and love Robert Downey Jr., but all that stuff that was in that movie has been done in the comics. If you've been reading comics, it's just seeing it come to life. And so it's really interesting that for people who have no concept of what really the source material is, or that they think comics are not, or, you know, there's that whole stigma of comics are just for kids, you're like, man, my favorite movie is Iron Man. Well, it's basically just a comic book come to life. That's all it is. So,
well, you could say that started with maybe the Superman series? Or, well, was there something before that that was in the movies?
I think that there's a really interesting – it ebbs and flows, because there's the Superman movies. The first couple did really well, but then it really – they didn't do so well after the next couple of Superman movies. It came back around with in 1989 when they did the first Batman with Michael Keaton. But then those
a
movies.
Great Batman, by the way.
It was great. I love that. I love both those first two movies. And Tim Burton was a great director for.
He's an awesome director in general.
In general, yeah. Yes. But it was such a great fit for that. And so then, you know, it hit a bit of a resurgence, but then those fell off as well. You know, eventually you got to the Batman and Robin, and people are like, okay, we're done with this again.
It plays out.
Exactly. And so it's very cyclical. And so what you found is that now we're up to, I think, the real new movie renaissance of superhero movies that we're going through now started with a combination of the redone Spider-Man, the redone Batman, and then the Marvel genre of movies, when, you know, kicking off with Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Captain America, and now culminating in Avengers. I mean, this year, three major comic book movies are coming out. Avengers in May, and then, if I'm not mistaken, I think in June, you get The Amazing Spider-Man, which is because they're relaunching the franchise with Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. And then in July is the third and final Batman movie. So
where does X-Men fit in?
So they're actually working on another X-Men movie right now.
And where did that originate from?
Comics.
Which one, though? Like, which franchise?
X-Men. Like, the X-Men comics that came out. So the first X-Men was out in 1963. So Uncanny X-Men, which is what the movies are based off of, is the Uncanny X-Men and the X-Men series. And there's been so many spin-offs and different series, but it's all really from Uncanny X-Men.
What I find interesting about comic novels is that they are very sophisticated. I mean, to call something Uncanny X-Men, that isn't really a kid's thing.
No, and what's interesting is that if you read those early books, I mean, all they are is actually, and they were coming out in a time of real civil unrest in the United States. And when you look at the persecution of mutants, it's actually an allegory to the civil rights struggle. And because what they are is they're hated for being different. Yeah, their difference is superpowers, but it's very easy to look at the parallels and see that what it is a commentary on what is happening in the world, and especially at the United States at the time when people are being persecuted just for the color of their skin.
This is a subject close to your heart. You just came out with your own graphic novel about the civil rights movement.
Correct. It was called The Silence of Our Friends, and we released it in January. So I co-wrote it with Mark Long, who's a local video game company owner. He owns a couple of video game companies here in Seattle, but he grew up in the late 60s Texas, and he was really affected by the time of growing up in this really big important time and important place in the civil rights movement. And so we got together and together crafted a story that takes place during that time in Texas, during the kind of basically starting with the Tet Offensive in Vietnam and ending with the assassination of Dr. King and events that were surrounding there's a famous shooting at Texas Southern University when there's a riot and a police officer was killed and five black students were put on trial, known as the TSU-5, and blamed for the shooting at the police officer.
So how are you doing with the book right now?
Really good. We just finished a book tour. It spent 4 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
How do you think you achieved that? Who knows?
Dumb
right?
luck. You know, I'm very happy to say that the reviews have been overwhelmingly positive, and it's just... We've had an amazing publisher behind us, Macmillan, which is one of the largest publishers in the world.
Did you have an agent?
We did, yeah. And so they got us. And Macmillan's, their First Second, which is the comic publisher, their division, really helped push the book out there, getting it into a lot of, especially schools and libraries, and used as educational, because it's a kind of a barely fictionalized version of a real event.
So that makes it fun.
Yeah.
And a spoonful of sugar makes education a lot easier.
It's true.
We're talking all about Comic-Con here. We're talking about the civil rights movement, graphic novels here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. We've been speaking with Jim Dimonikos about what it takes to put together a convention like Comic-Con. We're going to talk a lot more about that. Are you a comics fan planning to attend the event or wondering how you can do business with Jim? Call us at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'd love to hear about it. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. And now, we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Here's Robin.
I'm here with Jim Dimonikos, who is the founder and creator of Comic-Con and also the owner of 4 Comic Stop comic book stores. And we're talking about how he puts Comic-Con together. And we had mentioned that Jason Momoa is going to be one of the headliners at the event. So how did you get Jason to come?
I'll be there the whole weekend.
Yeah. Jim, I'm really happy.
If you can find me, you know.
What are you going to be wearing, a carnation?
Yeah, I will be wearing exactly what I'm wearing now.
Oh, he's wearing a black shirt with a big Emerald City Comic-Con logo on it.
Pretty much.
He looks like the biggest smiling guy you'll find there. He's great.
I'll be around the whole time. I might look like a little frenetic during the show. I never feel like I sit still.
Are you going to have a headset or like one of those wireless?
I would love to have like you know, my own Lobot kind of Star Wars guy with a big headphone, so whenever I need anything I can just turn to him, have him, you know, contact what I need.
But I need one of those too. That'd be great.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah. No, that would be fantastic. So, no. So, in terms of Jason and all the celebrities, they all have convention agents. So it's a really interesting process. You actually deal with their and so they have two kinds of agents. They have an agent that gets them, you know, their work, which is so Jason has someone who gets them onto Game of Thrones, or you know, he was Conan in the new Conan movie, or his time on Stargate. That's one agent.
Like his acting.
Yeah, stuff. That's it. Basically, his acting. And then there's a convention agent, and so convention agents, what they do is they book them into events like ours, and so they arrange for them to be there for any number of days and to autograph and take photos with the fans. And so what we do is we contract with the agent to have these guys come out for any amount of time. Some of them can't be there the whole weekend. Like a number of our guests are Saturday, Sunday only because they can't come out on Friday. Because with some of them, like the great thing about the people that we bring is that they are working actors. So, and that's sometimes why you get such a shuffle in guests as well, is that they'll get a job and then they're unable to attend because, you know, this is their work and you have to understand that. But for us to bring the highest quality guest to the show, you take that risk that someone who is a working actor is going to get work. So, but we do our best to try to get these guys to come out. And a lot of them, you know, they'll work on Friday, fly out Friday night, do the show Saturday, Sunday, fly out Sunday night, and be back to work on Monday. Because they really do enjoy meeting their fans, and it's such a fun event.
So they get great exposure.
Oh, yeah.
But do you pay them as well?
So they actually – so what they do is they charge autograph and photo fees. So they have their own set of fees. And so – for you to get an autograph from someone, it costs X amount of dollars.
Really? So if I went up there and I wanted Jason's autograph,
so Jason specifically
I pay him
is $30.
For an autograph?
For an autograph.
Whoa.
And then it's $45 for a photo. And we have a professional photographer. You get a printed out 8x10, and you can also have it emailed to you high res as well. And so for that fee, you get a professional photo with a backdrop, and you get to stand next to, talk to, or whatever with the celebrity, get your photo taken, and that's how.
So how many do they typically sell?
So, you know, it really depends. I mean, it's
like Jason,
hundreds.
Like Jason. Really?
You know, yeah, oh yeah. Like, so, I mean, they're busy the whole weekend. There's people, I mean, let's face it, we'll just keep using Jason as an example. You have Stargate, you have Conan, you have Game of Thrones, and not all three of those are crossover. And by that, I mean, if you're a fan of Game of Thrones, you might not be a fan of Stargate, but you might be a fan of Conan because they're both kind of swords and sorcery, let's say. So when it comes to a diverse amount of fans, you're actually able to get a lot of different people. So they're busy over the entire weekend.
So you are alluding to the market segments that come to your show.
Correct.
So those are three genres. Yeah, like there's that historical fiction kind of genre.
Sure.
There's the sci-fi people.
Right.
There's the gaming people.
Sure.
Where the games are turned into TV shows. And
right.
Then there's the comics people.
Sure.
Did I miss anybody?
Well, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, technically, you know, how drilled down do you want to be with your genre? Like, you know, is it just people who like space opera, or do you like fantasy, or do you like, you know what I mean? There's so many, just like with anything, there's so many genres. And that's the nice thing about a lot of these guys is that they cover a huge amount of territory. So when you look at our guest list, you're able to get – so like Christopher Judge, he was also on Stargate, but he is in the new Batman movie. So it's like, okay, well, that covers – there's your superhero guy, for example, and your science fiction. So these guests are able to hit a wide market.
We're here with Jim Demonakos, who is the founder and creator and manager and organizer of Comic-Con that's coming up next weekend, and I'm Robin Block. Why did you start Comic-Con back in 2003?
So I am a fan, first and foremost. I've been going to conventions for as long as I can remember. When I started reading comics when I was 7 years old with a reprint copy of Fantastic Four number one, actually.
I actually know the number.
Well, it was the first one.
It was the very first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just a reprint. So it wasn't an original Fantastic Four number one, but I had gotten a reprint of it. And it was awesome. It was what got me into comics. So I started reading comics and I never stopped. And so when I was young, there was these really small shows here at the Seattle Center in the Northwest Rooms. It was called the Seattle Comic Card Convention. And they no longer do them, but they were really, like, I would say 400 to 700 people. And they'd do them twice a year, and they were a lot of fun, you know. And as a kid, I mean, you know, 9, 10 years old, you'd go there, and I would, like, maybe get a sketch from an artist or, you know, dig through back issue bins and find old comics. They were great, and, you know, my parents would always take me and my long-suffering family. I love my folks. My dad's 70 years old. Actually, speaking of business, just on a quick tangent, my dad just 2 months ago at 70 years old opened his, like, 12th restaurant. So
in Seattle,
up in Everett, called Nick's Jr. Burgers and Euros. And he just he the only thing I think my dad has ever failed at is retiring.
70 is the new 60, though. Right?
I'm telling you, like, he just was bored. He just didn't like being at home doing kind of nothing. So,
I think if you're an entrepreneur, and I know the listeners out there can appreciate this, it's in your blood. It's not something you just do as a hobby.
Oh, true.
Or it's like you have to do it. You choose to do it.
I feel like I'm a terrible vacationer because I can't even.
I have the same. I know how
you
feel.
I just can't even relax. I always plan a vacation after Emerald City because it's a full year of work coming up to the show, and afterwards I'm so exhausted.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, and but anyway, just to go back to the original question. So I would go to these shows, but then as I started getting older, I would actually travel and go out to, you know, San Diego or Chicago or other conventions around the country. And I would come back, and then the more I saw bigger shows, the smaller the show here looked. You know what I mean? So I started thinking, well, why don't we start a convention here? Like, why can't we have a convention of that size? And at the time, I was 3 years into I was at two stores by that point. I'd opened my first comic book store in 99 and then the second one in 2002. So I was at two stores already, and I'd gotten to know a lot of the other local retailers and all the guys who would exhibit at the other show who had the same complaint. Like, man, it'd be great to have something bigger. And eventually I just said, well, no one else is going to do it. I'm going to do it. So I talked with my two partners who I have at my stores and said, I think we should do a convention. How hard could it be?
Famous and, last words.
Yes, exactly. And they've never let me live that down. Regardless, it was nice. So what I did is I used all the connections I had with the local retailers, with the friends I'd made in the industry, in the comics industry, and we put on our very first event over at the back when it was Quest Field, at the Quest Field Plaza. And actually, we weren't even at the Quest Field Plaza. That wasn't until year three. We were, you know, like when you go to a Seahawks or Sounders game and they have the team store, that's technically, when you think about it, under the bleachers. That was actually where we held the first Emerald City. It was in that, like, a little banana-shaped area underneath the show. And we had, you know, a line out the door and 2,500 people, and the show has just slowly but surely grown. And
did you promote it back then?
So we did. So first off, you advertise to your audience. We made sure to get flyers and postcards out to every local comic book store and let them know that we were doing this event. We were bringing some pretty big name guys. I called in sort of every single favor that I had saved up in the last decade of, like, being a fan and becoming friends with a lot of industry people, and brought a great amount of creators to the show. We also went on the radio and we bought radio advertising and tried
the power of radio
and tried to get people.
It's always nice to hear.
Yeah, and tried to get people to come out to the show, and we had a fantastic turnout. So and we've just continued slowly but surely to grow from there. And so now here we are at our 10th anniversary show, looking at a projected 40,000 attendees. So
do you think you pull in people from outside the region now?
Oh, I know I do, actually.
People travel.
Last year we got people from 46 states and from 14 countries.
Really?
To come to the show. As far away, our furthest away was Australia. We also got Japan, England, and Germany.
Do you think
last year
having a more powerful internet presence has helped you?
Of course. Yeah, the power of Facebook, Twitter, and being online so that your show can reach an audience of anywhere is you can't underestimate its impact on your business.
We'll be talking more about that in a few minutes. We're speaking with Jim DeMonacos of Comic-Con. He started it back in 2003, and we're going to hear a lot more about how he's putting the show together as we continue our interview. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. We'll be right back. I'm here speaking with Jim DeMonacos of Comic-Con. And we were talking all about who's going to be there, the headliners like Jason Momoa, and how he started it back in 2003. And it's going to be almost 40,000 people this year. So you charge for the event, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
What are the ticket prices right now?
So it's $60 for 3 days, $30 for a Saturday ticket, $25, I think, if I'm not mistaken, for a Sunday ticket, and $20 for a Friday ticket.
So it's a pretty profitable venture.
Yeah, it's good. We are at this point profitable. It took a very long time, to be honest.
Like, what was the first year you broke even?
Actually, we broke even year one.
Okay. So you had profit in year one then?
No, we broke even year one.
Okay.
Even if it was a dollar, I guess, yes.
Yes, we technically that is had profitable.
Profit.
But...
Yes. But it's a real up and down. I mean, so it's how do you define profit, right? We did the show, but I didn't get paid.
Revenue minus costs.
Right. But like no one up until year, six to seven, no one was actually pulling any salary from this or anything. It was, okay, well, the show at least broke even or made a little bit. But, once you make, we made $5,000. Well, we have to put down a $5,000 deposit for next year. Well,
there it goes.
Yeah. So it wasn't until the show just a few years ago was finally able to actually generate, good revenue where people can start being compensated for time put in.
Did it help sales at your stores, though?
Well, we do generate a lot of sales towards my stores in terms of, and that's not just mine. We have about 20 stores that sell tickets to the show. And so what happens, especially when we don't, when we stop selling our tickets online a couple weeks out, it actually drives a lot of sales towards the physical stores.
So you used to sell tickets online?
Right, up until March 14th, and then there's 2 weeks until it stops 2 weeks to make sure everyone gets their tickets before the event.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So there's shipping.
So there's enough time. And so once we stop selling online, then your only quote-unquote recourse is to get a ticket either at the door or at one of the comic book stores.
Is there a sellout number?
There is.
What's your maximum capacity?
Well...
That's a hard number to figure out, I imagine.
And actually, we don't necessarily have one. They calculate it based on – so it's an interesting question. It's based off of square footage. So take a 10 by 10 square and pretend that's our convention. You need to have like a 5 by 5 square of your exhibitors, let's say. So that leaves the other 5 by 5 – I know that's not the actual math. But,
that leaves the other
space to be where people can be, right? Because the exhibitor is taking up that 5x5 block. Well, each person gets a 3x3 square in real life and a 3x3. So what they do is they calculate the empty space versus the amount of people if everyone was standing together in a 3x3. But keep in mind that it's not just a show floor for us. We have one show floor. We have the Sky Bridge. We have 8 programming rooms that are running 140 panels throughout the convention. We have 2 full floors of gaming. We have one of our biggest panel rooms where you do Q&As with celebrities is 3,000 people. So, you have to also calculate in, all right, well, at any given time, is there 3,000 people over in this room? Is there hundreds of people in the rooms listening to Q&As? Is there how many people on the floor?
It's like managing Disneyland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Except it's not my problem, which is nice. In terms of it's the convention center. It's on the convention center to tell us because it's them and the fire marshal who tell us when we have to close the doors. So last year.
Did you arrive at a number?
Well, they don't have one.
Oh, they don't give you one.
They don't. So there is a number, but it's so fluid that for them it's – until the show reaches a point where it's drawing – I mean, 40,000 people is nothing to sneeze at. Don't get me wrong. But it's not until you're at that 70, 60 mark that you're actually selling the show out in advance. And they have a number for that. But until then, but funny enough for us, 2013, we're actually taking up more space at the convention center, right? Like right now we're taking up most of the fourth floor and a few of the rooms on the third and second floor. Next year, I'm also taking up the entire sixth floor. So I'm adding another 120,000 square feet. Well, that's a lot of people. So then that every year the number is completely different, if there even is a number, because we are the show floor is so malleable and the space that we're taking up actually expands and contracts depending on the year and what's available.
I'm speaking with Jim Demonakis of Emerald City Comic Con. I'm Robin Block and you're listening to Minding Your Business. The size of the event expected to be 40,000 this year. You might make some profit. How much kind of staff do you have?
Well, we have 4 full-time staff.
That doesn't seem like a lot to manage 40,000 people.
No, it's
enough. 10,000 per person.
Exactly. we each grab 10,000 people and call it good.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, so we all have a breakdown of duties, and then on site we have a lot more. You know, we have people who are coming and like temporary help. There's people who come, a lot of my employees from the comic book store come out and, you know, volunteer their time. Everyone gets to take a certain amount of responsibility for different areas. So I'm like, all of a sudden I'm like, okay, on site, you get to take care of registration. You take care of media. You take care of admissions. You take care of merchandise. You take care of, you know what I mean?
You block it out.
So you block it out. But in advance, there's really just 4 of us working on the organizational end. And then the couple months before the show is when you start folding in the rest of the staffers to kind of take care of the specific areas of the show.
4 people isn't much to manage an event of this size.
It's not.
And all the moving parts.
It's that's why I am full time. I do it, you know.
This is your job.
This is my job.
Your business, your job.
Yeah.
Your life.
It's interesting. My life, really. Well, because it's funny, because not only do I do this, but I still own the 4 stores and I'm involved in those. I have a band that tours, like we're going to Australia. They invited us to Australia again.
Wow. Which is the What's the name time. Of the band?
It's called Kirby Crackle.
What kind of music?
It's pop rock, but it's what we call nerd rock. So it's all songs that are based on comics, video games. It's original rock songs from the perspective of characters. Or, you know, we just released a video called I Want to Live in a World Full of Heroes, which it sounds exactly what it is. It's a lot of fun. We're actually having
– Is that on YouTube?
Yeah, we have,
so people,
you know,
can look
we have
up.
Like over 1 million hits on YouTube. And
wow.
It's great. We're doing a show Friday night of Emerald City to tie it all together at the Hard Rock Cafe called Crackle Fest. So it'll be it'll be a lot of fun. So,
do you sing or do you play?
I'm the lyricist.
You write the lyrics?
Yes. I'm like the Bernie Taupin to the band's Elton John. So I get to be behind the scenes because I can't fit in band practice on top of everything else. I just don't have the time.
Do you play an instrument?
I don't. I have a good ear for music. And I like to make funny rhymes. And so it works out okay.
I love the diversity that you have.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about a little bit more about the people who actually go to the show. Do you think
humans?
The human
generally,
beings, yeah. In costume or not.
Bipeds.
Yeah, well, some of them, you know, I think they're probably really kitty cats and Klingons. And, you know, from the videos I saw, I think people really assume the character of their favorite show and things like that.
Costuming is a big part of, for a lot of people, like, you know, they spend an entire year working on their costume for the show. I mean, it's a great place to show off and to put on display the work that they've done for the entire year for the show.
Do you think Seattle is a particularly appropriate place for this kind of show?
I think so. I think we're a very tech-heavy industry city. We're very nerd friendly, for lack of a better term. I mean, let's face it, we have Microsoft, Nintendo, Amazon, Google, and that's, you know, let's take the broadest strokes here. You know, there's a couple of comics publishers here. If you want to look at the macro, yeah, Fantagraphics Books is based here. And so there's a general openness to the genre, to all genres here. I mean, let's face it, aren't we the city with a sci-fi museum? I mean, there is no other city with a sci-fi
museum.
Well,
let's just put it this way. Paul Allen is here.
Yeah.
But I mean, Mr. Nerd himself.
And
Bill Gates, of course.
And there you go. And so,
sorry, guys.
No, but think about it. Like, we are also one of the top markets for sci-fi in the country. Like, when you look at ratings broken down by geographical zone.
Are you talking about, like,
viewership of
sci-fi
shows? Yeah, like,
So what is it about someone who is into computer science and sciences and things that make them particularly interested? I mean, I get the sci-fi connection, but why are they particularly interested in superheroes, for example?
Well, I think there's an interesting escapism with comics. I mean, there's a story of people who have unnatural abilities that make them different from other people. I mean, you know, folding it back to the X-Men, kind of bringing it back around. A lot of computer guys probably picked on, probably not super popular in school. I know I wasn't. It's just how it was. But those genres then appeal to
the underdog.
To the underdog. I think that's...
So it's a convention of underdogs?
I would say, and there might actually be people dressed as underdog, I would say.
Oh, okay. So. I used to love that cartoon.
There you go, bring it all around.
So how have advances in digitization, digital technologies, digital marketing changed what you're doing with Comic-Con?
Well, I think it's really interesting what's going on right now in the comics industry in terms of its move towards digital. I mean, earlier this year, didn't Amazon announce that their digital sales of books are now outnumbering their physical sales of books? And so what the comics industry is doing is finding itself looking at that and saying, well, how can we move ourselves into a more digital medium? Like, reading comics on an iPad is pretty sweet. The colors are great. You don't miss out on anything. In terms of how it affects me personally, like, it's kind of twofold. I think there's too many people who are scared of digital. They don't understand that I'm not afraid that you're going to stop buying comics at my store. There's just the people who want to buy comics at my store are going to buy comics at my store, and in general are I would say predominantly not interested in stopping picking up their physical books and instead reading digital. There are, but in general they're not. What they don't understand is that the opportunity here is that people could actually discover comics through digital and then drive that to physical.
And why do you think that happens?
Well, I think, like, the up till now, when you're looking at digital as a medium, especially for the comic book industry, they don't really get that this trying to find a new audience, digital is the way to go, especially if you're looking at converting a younger audience. And so you're not getting as many kids coming to a comic book store. Instead, you're getting people who are already interested in physical comics coming to a comic book store, while you can get kids to read digital, and then they're just going to consume media however they'd like.
We're talking with Comic-Con founder and organizer Jim Demonakos on Money Radio 1300 KKOL, and I'm Robin Block. We'd love to hear your questions. If you're a comics fan, if you're planning on attending Comic-Con, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
I'm speaking with Jim Demonakos about Comic-Con and comics and the genre and the people who love comics and all the people we love that go to Comic-Con. And we were just talking about how digital is impacting the comics industry. Mm-hmm. But in terms of marketing Comic-Con,
yep.
What changes are you making and how you promote the event?
So, like, Emerald City Comic-Con as a brand is something that we continue to build as a pop culture destination. So what we've done is really done quite a bit more outreach in terms of Facebook and Twitter. So with Facebook, it's an interesting way to very specifically target an audience.
And how have you done that? Tell me some of the tactical things.
So it's really interesting. So you can go and say, so let's say you were on Facebook the other day and you were browsing Whole Foods Facebook for some reason. And you're like, you know what? I like Whole Foods. Just so you give it the thumbs up. And if I was marketing to someone who might be into organic produce, I can actually say anyone who's shown an interest in Whole Foods that is between these age ranges, male or female, in a specific geographic area, it'll serve up that little ad on the right that shows.
So that's the pay-per-click advertising piece. But give me something more specific about Comic-Con rather than a Whole Foods example.
So just taking the exact same thing is, so this year we have a number of voice actors. For example, if you're familiar with the show Futurama, the guys who do the voices of Fry and Bender are going to be at the show. That's the main characters. So what we've done is we very specifically have served up ads that say, hey, meet the voices of Fry and Bender at Emerald City Comic Con, and they're served to anyone who has liked or shown interest in Futurama on Facebook. And this way you can actually get a conversion. So it makes you have to do dozens of very specific ads. So instead of just having one generic ad that you want to serve up to everyone, that we want to create specific, like, I get it. Marketing is marketing. I'm trying to get you to buy my product. Like, there's no invisible wall. Like, it's, I understand that. You understand that. But as I also want to speak to you, just like I get spoken to, or I think about the show, is as a fan. I want you to know that if you're a fan of Futurama, we have something for you very specifically. While you're there, aside from those two things that I'm telling you you're going to like, I am also serving up an entire convention of other things that you might like.
So you're giving them a little taste. So you're running an ad on Facebook, very specific to Futurama, for example, mm-hmm. saying, hey, we've got a video you want to watch or hear an audio of some of the characters.
Right. Come
send some
them.
Over to your website. Yeah, the language has to be very brief,
right.
Of
like,
course.
And that's the thing, and that's what we want to do. I want to say, come meet these two guys. Do you want to meet the voices of your favorite characters? Come to Emerald City. That gets you to the Emerald City webpage. It lets you look to see what else is going on. And you're like, well, okay, I like Futurama, but I don't love Futurama. And
it's what we call link bait, right? Mm-hmm. You're giving them a taste of something. And it might be close to what they like. And then you're going to deliver up some other video, some audio of these of characters, actors, et cetera,
right.
that they can kind of hang out with at your website.
Yeah. And so then the website is, it's very simply constructed to show, here's all the things that you can do and experience at Comic-Con, not just with the one thing that we told you about. And if all those things combined are something that you are interested in, you should come to Comic-Con.
So first of all, what is your click-through rate from Facebook looking like?
Like 8 to 12%.
Oh, that's fairly high.
Yeah.
And then the conversion rate? Roughly.
4%.
So not bad.
No.
Because click-through ads are pretty inexpensive on Facebook.
Right.
Are you doing other things on Facebook besides the advertising?
Other than just having our Facebook page itself be a very active, like we're a very interactive page. It's not just, we're not just serving up updates. Like too many places are just like, here's the new announcement. And we do that, of course, when we need to announce like, hey, this guy is coming or this thing is happening. Yeah, of course. But we also, like, we're fans ourselves. You have to realize, like, this show, one of its reasons I feel for success is that it's a show for fans by fans. You know, we're fans as well. So when they release the trailer for Prometheus, the new Aliens prequel, you know, we're like, hey, guys, did you see the trailer? It has nothing to do. We have no actors from Prometheus. We have nothing to do with Aliens. But we're just excited about it. When they released the Spider-Man trailer right before the Super Bowl, we're like, guys, check out the trailer for Spider-Man.
You have a perfect product for that affinity marketing that needs to happen with social media. I don't know if that would work as well if you were an accountant, for an example. You know, an accounting convention.
It would
be hard to build the audience around that.
Agreed.
So are you – what? I mean, Facebook, another common thing to do is to go to someone else's wall or join a group and then comment there.
Yeah, we don't do that.
You don't bother doing that.
It's not that we don't bother, but like it's cheap. Like I don't like it.
You think it's cheating?
It's not cheating. It's just I don't think that it's really transparent. It's like I don't have time in a way to be like, listen, I want to go over to Futurama and just be like, boy, howdy, do I love Futurama. If you guys love Futurama too, you should check out Emerald City Comic Con. Come on down.
I mean, maybe not so corny.
I could, but no, I would have to do it like that or not do it at all. That's just, that's my line in the sand. But I don't think it's particularly effective. I don't think that, for me.
You haven't tried it though.
I haven't tried it, but I'm cool without it.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think you make a good point. You have to prioritize. If you only have 4 staff to put this whole thing together and promote it, there might be faster ways to get. There's such a ramp up on social media.
Sure.
And those might all – you're speaking to people who are fans already. Part of drawing 40,000 people is attracting people who may not have heard of Comic-Con yet. Mm-hmm. I met – as I was talking about the show and letting people know you're going to be on – there are some people who said, oh, my God, Comic-Con, I can't wait to go.
Right.
And then other people are like, what are you talking about? But I think there might be an interest to that broader category.
Well, and that's the thing. We do create a show that I feel anyone who is at all a fan of any kind of genre, television, genre movies at all. Like, even if you're just like, I like reading fantasy books. Like, great. I have something for you. And that's the thing about Emerald City is that it's a product that has a very wide appeal.
So are you doing anything with mobile marketing?
Aside from just being able to what we call a guidebook. And guidebook is an app that's free that lets you download the entire
like the show schedule.
The show schedule and maps. But we don't do anything very specifically with like mobile marketing.
Kind of outbound marketing, texting, that kind of thing.
Right. We do some stuff on site where like, hey – sign up, we text to win kind of thing. But that's when you're already there. So it's not necessarily marketing. It's just we want to interact with you more while you're at the show.
It's part of the entertainment to have that contest.
Correct.
Do you do anything at the convention where you try to bring groups of like-minded people together?
Well, we just basically put a convention on, and then it actually brings a group of like-minded people together. And we're even doing like the cool thing is that we tend to do like after-hours events too. Like if you're a fan of Kevin Smith, he's going to come do a live show of Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. And there's so many after-hours things that we do with the city. So it's a lot of fun.
You could learn so much more by visiting the Comic-Con EmeraldCityComicCon.com website. Learn about all the after-hour events, learn about what's going on, learn about the headliners, watch those videos we talked about. But we're out of time right now. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. For an archive of today's program, links to our guests' website, or to sponsor this show, check out our website at mybmedia.com. From Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block. See you next week.
Listening to Minding Your Business with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with 2 B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.